Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have a really incredible founder, you know, a founder that he was a professional soccer player, I mean, a football player, as you would call it, in Europe, right, where I'm from. But obviously in the US, we have a different terminology, but we're going to be talking about, you know, all the good stuff that we like to hear, you know, when it comes to, you know, building, scaling, financing companies. He's been with his partner for over 11 years, you know, how this all came together. Also about raising money. They have raised quite a bit of money for their company. And they're doing really amazing with tons of companies that they have acquired with a lot of employees. And they have raised over $340 million in debt and in equities. And there's tons of stories around this too that we're going to be touching on. So again, very inspiring conversation ahead of us. And without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Sebastian Carlson, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for that. What an intro. hard to follow up that. Thank you.
So give us a walk through memory lane. How was life being born and raised in Sweden?
I think it's dark and cold, as everyone probably know. It's quite a generic picture, but it's true. But I will say Sweden is a really good country to grow up in. I'm not sure if everyone knows, but we actually have a we are quite socialistic country, but we have some benefits. We, for example, every citizen had the opportunity when I was small to get a computer really early, and also we had broadband quite soon. So I think that's why we have been good at actually creating company. I think Stockholm, when you compare it to rest of the world, I think if you just look at the unicorn per capita, I think we're second behind Palo Alto and San Francisco. So I think the fundamental was there from the beginning. So I cannot complain anything at all.
So how was it like also for you at a personal level, you know, growing up in a household with a single mom? You know, I'm sure that was quite inspiring for you as well.
No, but I've seen my mom working double shift and just putting everything out there to give the kids the opportunity to do something well. So I think always I've been feeling like I'm quite lucky to have someone who's putting their life and sacrificing their life for me to get the opportunity. So also I felt some sort of obligation to do something well with whatever I've done. I made a promise to my mom when I was younger to take care of her when she retired, and I was fortunate enough to be successful in some levels, so I could acquire a house to her here in Stockholm. So I'm proud of that, and I'm also proud of my mom for giving me the opportunity to pay her back.
That's amazing. Now, in your case, you became a professional footballer. So how did the whole idea of kicking the ball and getting into it, you know, how did that come about and making it to become a professional? I mean, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, but I think it's like every kid, if we get some positive affirmation when we're doing something, then we continue to do that. And it was the same for me. Like I was quite early on gifted enough to be able to play a little bit better than my friends. So then, of course, I tried to take this as long as I could, and I've been blessed to be able to have it as a living since I was between 18 and I think 27. So I'm grateful for that period, and it was a fun time and also good learnings. You know that it's not that fun to practice in, especially in Sweden, between January and April, because we have a different season here. And then you go into the fun part between April and later stage of October. But the boring part during the winter, that I think gave me the brain power and grit that I also can translate it into my next career, which is creating ventures.
So what about you know, the whole soccer career that you did, soccer football yeah. career that you did it from 18 to 27. As you were saying, yeah. you know, you got the grit, I'm sure the competitiveness, the wanting, you know, to get stuff done, you know, dealing with whatever adversity you had in front of you. How do you think that has shaped you up to really become the entrepreneur that you are today?
No, but I think you need to learn how to also build relationship with 22 or sometimes up to 30 other guys, and every often guys who is good at sports is also quite, I would say, alpha if you are looking at some sort of persona. So I think it's quite a tough and challenging environment to be in a locker room, and I think you learn to handle pressure, because if you're playing on TV, for example, or if you have a big crowd, of course you get a little bit nervous and you need to be able to handle that. And I think it's the same there. You know and learn how to build relationship. You learn also when you need to stick up for yourself. And like I said, the thing before about pressure, and I think pressure doesn't affect me that much. Of course, everyone gets affected by pressure, but I think I can learn to switch it off and on when I need to. And I think, like I said, those learnings I've transferred into when I'm working with my business.
So let's say that's a very important point, pressure, because obviously as founders, and there's tons of founders that are probably listening right now that are wondering about pressure, you know, pressure of running out of money, pressure of needing to hire people, pressure of meeting deadlines, being able to deliver to a customer. So let's put that pressure now into the game. Let's say you are now in a soccer field. You know, the score is equal. And all of a sudden, the last minute, you know, there's a penalty. There's a penalty that the referee, you know, has called. And you just put it there. You are going to be taking it. You tell your teammates that this is yours, that you're going to make this one. And let's say you're right there. It's just you and the goalkeeper in front of you. The whole stadium looking at you. Everyone is looking at you. Obviously, the pressure is on. How are you able to remove those voices to get out of your own head, to be able to be in the game and to just be in action?
I was a goalkeeper, but even then I could take a penalty, but and I have done that in the past, but I think it's like everything else. You don't start with your first venture and you raise what I know, $3 billion, the first seed round and something like that. And it's the same with football. You learn how to compete in front of 50 people, 500 people, 5,000 people on television. So you learn and you gradually get exposed to more and more pressure. And then, but I've also seen, and I don't know what that's coming from, because I don't say that it's the best players actually playing in Premier League or the highest league all over Europe or in your home country in Spain. I think it's the one who has the best decision making and, like you said, can handle pressure. I'm not sure if that's something just built in to some sort of characteristic. And I can't really answer the question regarding pressure, but I've always been comfortable around pressure. But of course, you always have some sort of ache in your chest or stomach, both for taking this penalty, as you mentally described, but also when you're having pressure towards, for example, stakeholders when you build a company.
So obviously, you know, you can't be playing soccer forever. So 27, you know, years old, that's the time where you decide to hang the boots. So your next chapter was ultimately starting your own thing, and it was a sales company. So what were the sequence of events to you thinking, hey, I want to start something on my own rather than, you know, going and working for someone else?
No, but I think I had my soul searching period, and I saw that some of my teammates, they went over, like I said, playing in Premier League, and the wages they have in Premier League compared to the Swedish League is the discrepancy is ridiculous. So I was thinking to myself, I can do this football thing until I become 35 and maybe 40, but I will not. I will just put my career and my life on hold. So I was just soul searching for, I think, at least 2 years, and building up my plan. What am I going to do? And then again, I'm fortunate enough to meet people who had much higher competence and experience than I had. So I actually co-founded this sales company, and we did both customer support, B2B and B2B B2C sales. We did sales as a service to other customers. But I will say, in the beginning, when I started this, I was just the one piggybacking on the other two. So they were the stars and running the show. But still, I understood quite early that you need to be around people that is much better than you. And I think that's also, I would say, an advice. If you for too long of a period are absolutely the best in the room, then you should change the room. And I think I've always been able to surround myself with people that is always challenging me, and people who has competences and different. They have just been better at different things than I have been. So I've been fortunate enough to be around a lot of good people, but I've been skillful enough to be able to see if I'm the best in the room, change room.
So obviously you had to change room, you know, eventually, and that meant going to Stockholm.
Yeah.
Essentially what happened is that you went there to work for PwC.
Yep.
But as they say, once an entrepreneur, always an entrepreneur. So you got the venture, you know, in you. And that's what got you, you know, perhaps switching from corporate again to venture. So walk us through those transition and sequences of events that needed to happen there.
No, but I think when I grew up, I thought that going to PwC was like, okay, now I made it. But like you said, I was there for like maybe 6 months, and then I was starting to like, oh, I want to be on the other side. I want to be on the other side. I don't want to work with this part. I want to be on the other side. So I again was lucky enough to run into a guy called Saidas Melsade. It was one of the I would say best serial entrepreneur the last 20 years here in the Nordics. He was a chemist, invented the world's hardest glass. I met with him because they were acquiring a company from PwC as an advisor. And I just had a lunch with those guys. And after a lunch and also cooperating because I sent a lot of deals to them, then we actually had a lunch where we were talking about, shouldn't you do it and work with us? After a couple of hours, read beers, I signed for them, and I've never regretted. And again, when I came from PwC, a lot of competent people, but when I came to that side and met with all of those entrepreneurs, it was another level. So like I said, I felt the worst. I was definitely the worst in the room. And then I thought, okay, let's go through with this and just extract everything that I can from these guys.
So then how did you get back into the venture wagon? You know, how did you make that jump?
No, we actually, so we had some different ventures. So what we did in the beginning, we was actually a private incubator. So in Sweden, you have something called Ladder on Target, which means if you do research, you own the IP that you do research about. So Side invented the world of solid glass. So we actually own the IP. So that's like I said, claim to fame. And he been able to commercialize that. So we did that. We took a lot of IP from academia and tried to commercialize it. Not everything went well, but some of them did. But then we also started to build a venture looking into SaaS products. So we had like a portfolio of I would say IP that wasn't, it didn't have a clear go-to-market strategy. It didn't really have the first paying customer. And I met with the co-founder and I would say the engineer and the brain behind the software. And that was also inside this group that I'm talking about before. So me and him teamed up. We took it to all of the Nordic countries in 3 years. We got VC backing. It's still VC backed. It's called Envise today. It's a project-based CRM for the real estate and also an errand handling system for real estate industry. And I would say that was my a little bit claim to fame, even if it was not anything near what I'm doing today. But after 5 years as CEO, I did a succession, and then I teamed up for real with my co-founder that I work with today. But he has always been peripheral, backed me in my other ventures.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard. And already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on, when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
So, yeah, so you did a few ventures. Obviously, it was the same investors, you know, same co-founder. I want to talk about, because there, you know, with your co-founder, you've had, you know, quite a successful partnership. And I want to talk about that time where the two of you guys were in a restaurant and it was time to, you know, try to put some ink, you know, to paper, you know, and to make it official that you guys were co-founders. So what happened? What happened there?
No, but like I said, my co-founder, I love him to death now, but he is really vague. He's always saying, "Yeah, but let's start. Let's do it. That's perfect. Are you joining? When are you starting?" And I was like, "Side, please, can we put something into an agreement?" And I said, "Why? Don't you trust me? Of course I trust you, but like, if I'm going to put all my energy, all my money into this venture, then we need to sign something." And then he just took a napkin, and I have this. So this is not like a founding story like Neumann did about the kibbutz or anything like that. This is actually true. I have it still on in my home. But we took this napkin and we put down everything. And he had three KPIs. In 5 years, we're going to acquire 50 companies and do 500 million. Swedish krona in EBITDA. That's around 50 million euro in another currency. So that was the thing that he put down on a napkin. My name, his name, and then we signed it. So I think that's a good story. And like I said, I'm keeping that napkin.
That's incredible. Now, for the people that are listening to really get it, what ended up being the model, you know, of Libya Group? What are you guys doing?
So I will say that we allocate capital. That is what we do. But to be able to allocate capital, then you need to have vehicles to allocate capital through. So when we build our start our venture, we often, of course, looking for to put in our own money into that, but also to add additional debt, so we have some firepower. And then we try to build a portfolio of companies. So we acquire companies, and Livia is focused on, I would say, business critical software and service provided towards business critical software. So we see business critical software as ERP, CRM, BI, cybersecurity, and of course, I would say niche software that is connected or entangled to ERP or CRM. So that is where we are focusing when we acquire a company. But now when we have acquired 42 companies all over Europe, I also say that if we have the possibility to grow organically, if the total addressable market is there, if you see that the KPIs for organic growth, customer acquisition cost, lifetime value, lead to deal in percentage and days, if you know all of this, then you can actually do a calculation for allocating capital organically much better than to acquire a new vehicle. And also, I think the biggest risk is actually not sometimes the numbers; it's more about people. So every time you acquire one new company, you also get exposed to one more person. And I think the biggest risk is actually person and relationship. Because especially if you've been running your company, you're the founder, and then all of a sudden I acquire 100% of you and we're going to work together because you have an earnout or an equity component in Livia, then of course to go from being the star and this is my baby to actually be able to, okay, you need to listen to my rules as well, that could be a shift for someone. So not I don't think everyone is made to work in an environment when they're not 100% owning the company. I think I would actually have problems just being an employee today. So I understand them 100%. I think that's the biggest challenge.
And I guess, you know, for a structure like this, I mean, where you guys have like 42 companies, you know, incredible amount of employees too. How do you go about making sure that, let's say, each and every single one of those acquisitions is successful, you know, when it comes to the integration, which is the toughest part? And also, how do you go about making sure that you guys are able to keep everything flowing nicely amongst all these different companies that you're putting under that same umbrella?
Yeah, but we have a rule. So for every 8 company, we have 1 growth director. And growth director is the one responsible for that portfolio. So when you just look it down, like 8 companies per growth director, it isn't that many. We're also quite decentralized. So I will say the growth director's main objective is to see, do we have the right CEOs? And so the CEO is the one who's calling all the shots. So we put a lot of trust into the CEOs and the entrepreneur that we acquire. And we want to work with the entrepreneurs that we acquire. So often they transfer part of their enterprise value when we acquire them into Livia shares, for example. And then I focus mostly on the negative outliers. So that sounds boring, but I would say at every given time, it's always like 5 to 8% of the company that has some problems. They're doing a succession. Maybe they are churning right now. We need to put some energy into that. So I focus mostly on the negative outliers. And then I work tight with the responsible growth director for those. But I don't really focus on the good ones, so because they're doing themselves. So our strategy is to be decentralized. The CEOs is calling the shots. The growth director look through that we have the right CEO in place. And then, of course, what we as an owner decide is about all the over liquidity that the companies create. How are we going to use that? Am I using that from HQ to acquire a company, for example, in Spain? Or are the company itself, do they have the KPI so I can see that the return for my shareholders is much, much better if we keep it in the company itself? So that is what we more as a strategic partner do. And then, of course, we're working with exercise like, do they have enough of a total addressable market? That is something that could be an issue sometimes if they are too niched of a software, for example. So then we need to do some product roadmap and leap of faith into new verticals or new regions. And also we try to be as close as a strategic partner to all of our customers. So we try to always somehow invent or get insights so that we can talk to C-levels or actually also be included in the board. So we work with different matrix, Ansoft matrix, Kralj's matrix, and also the KPIs for growth, as I talked about before. And if we do them over a long period of time, then we know that we're going to succeed. And that's also important. Sorry if I'm just shattering on here, but it is important sometimes also to zoom out a little bit. You cannot always just look at this quarter. You need to see, okay, where were they at 2020? Where are they now? And sometimes you need to have a dip in the curve. Because, for example, you need sometimes to hire a sales guy to go to a new region or something like that. So yeah, long answer, but that's how we work with the company.
And then about capitalizing, you know, the operation. I think that you guys have raised about 340 million euros, you know, between debt and equity. So how has been to the journey of raising the 340 million, and how do you think about that balance between debt and equity for something like this?
Yeah, but I think we always have a leverage between in now when we're not in a public environment. We work with between 2.5 and 3.5. But when we will go public, which we're planning to do in later stage or mid stage of 2025, then we will have a lower leverage. I think also you need to sometimes realize that you've been quite lucky. We were raising the first bond of 80 million euro in 2021, good times. And then we had really good numbers, organic growth as well. So we've been able to raise additional firepower. And then I need to also give a shout out to the bank syndicate that we work with today. We work with a bank called DB here in the Nordics and also Danske Bank. Then be really supportive of our journey. They understand us fully. And also we build a relationship for almost 1.5 year before we actually signed the facility agreement. And that facility agreement was signed in during the summer in 2023, which was quite a tough time as well. But they put a lot of faith in us. And then again, you see that you need to be lucky enough and also expose yourself towards this type of opportunities. But sometimes also timing needs to be there. And I think we have timed quite good time slots for raising the capital.
So when you raise capital, obviously it's raised on a vision, right? And that's the way that you're also enrolling employees, getting transactions done, is because there's a vision that everyone is going towards. So if you were to go to sleep tonight, Sebastian, and you wake up in a world where the vision of the group is fully realized, what does that world look like?
No, but I think in the first phase, as I will say that we are a distributor of software, business critical software, all over Europe. Everyone sees us as the vehicle. So if every big SaaS company in the US or India want to actually penetrate the European market, you will turn to us. And also the ones who has their own software, they turn to us. Okay, acquire us, because we know that you can get spread and distribution all over Europe. So I think that is my aim. And also a little bit more closer on, after we if we just tie it to the business plan, when we have deployed the money from a future IPO, we also have a self-financed M&A agenda from there on. We don't need to raise any more capital. We can just work with our own cash flow and decide quite much ourselves what will be the leverage. is the interest high? Okay, then we need to lower the leverage. Is the interest low? And of course, then we can raise the leverage. So I think to be able to actually control every single thing of Livia and also be the main partner when you need to distribute your software in Europe. That is my end goal for this.
So now let's say I'm able to put you into a time machine, Sebastian, and I bring you back in time to that moment where you were concluding your career as an athlete and you're 27 and you're thinking now you're going through that soul searching. And, you know, it's the moment where you're thinking, hey, maybe I should launch something of my own. Maybe I should start my own company. And let's say you're able to go back in time and you're able to be right there with that younger Sebastian. And you have the opportunity of giving that younger Sebastian one piece of advice before launching a company. What would that be and why, given what you know now?
That's a really good question. What advice would I give myself? I want to put into print something that I'm saying today, because I didn't really know that. I was just fortunate enough to be able to do that. But just surround yourself with the right persons, like I said before. And I didn't really understand that, but I had some sort of curiosity. And that's the second one. Always be curious and naive. Because I'm not comparing myself to Einstein. I don't have that ego, but he's saying I wasn't the smartest one, but I was the most curious. And I think he has curiosity to always actually take that lunch. I meet with a lot of like young entrepreneurs still, just so I can be able to, okay, what is the new technique? How are they pitching? Do they have something to learn me? So be curious and surround yourself with people who are better than you. I will say that is the thing that I will put into print to young Sebastian. Because that is what my biggest lessons are today.
I love it. So, Sebastian, for the people that are listening that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
You can go into LinkedIn, Sebastian Karlsson with a K, or you can just email me at sebastian.karlsson@liviagroup.com.
Amazing. Well, easy enough. Well, Sebastian, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an honor to have you with us.
Thank you, Alejandro. It's been an honor to be here. Thank you for that.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.